Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is John Batchelor, and this is the Friends of History Debating Society welcoming Professor Mackinder, International Relations, to comment on an irony these last days. The irony goes with first to Siberia. The headline in the Moscow Times, rapid Arctic warming is accelerating, permafrost collapse in Siberia, new report warns. And what we find in the bulk of this story is that Siberia and northern Russian regions are vulnerable to the impact of climate crisis. What we're also looking at is permafrost covers 65% of the Russian territory, melting fast due to climate crisis. The Republic of Sakha and Chukotka and Magadan regions are the most vulnerable to permafrost collapse, according to the report. I take this to the Russian public. That, I'm told, has become extremely alarmed about climate change. Heretofore, the presumption was the Kremlin, the national leadership, was indifferent because Russia has other challenges, such as it's an energy superpower, and selling fossil fuel, fossil-based energy to Western Europe is the income of the Kremlin. It's the major income. It's the dominant income, in addition to selling nuclear energy secrets and weapons. All right. But this was an indifference to the Kremlin until recently, when I'm told, suddenly Vladimir Putin is responsive to headlines about permafrost melting and the vast fires, the wildfires of Siberia in a drought. The fires are so big. How big are they, John? Around Yakutia, they're so big they don't measure them in acreage.
There is thought that the area that's aflame is about the same size as the country of Greece.
Yes, we're talking big here, and Yakutia
is really big.
Yakutia has evacuated children because the air quality has deteriorated. Now, Professor, I join that with this other fact that came to me recently about Moscow. The mayor of Moscow, some weeks ago, I believe in June, ordered the restaurateurs, the karaoke bar owners, and the cafes to card everybody coming to the door for proof of vaccination, or don't let them in. It turns out, in subsequent weeks, the mayor of Kremlin backed down. Why? Because the karaoke bar owners and the restaurateurs and the cafe owners said, if we do this, we're going to lose business. No, thank you. We're not going to shut down. Everybody's welcome. It's their problem, not ours, if they get sick. The mayor backed down. So the question I put to you is this, Professor. Is the autocracy of Russia, many sizable, dominant figures around Vladimir Putin, is that more sensitive, responsive to the will of the public than is the Republic of the United States, which right now is run by one side or the other, but there is no common purpose. There is partisanship, but not sensitivity to the public will. Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, I think that's a very provocative and insightful point. And my first reaction is that the president of the United States is shielded from the population of the United States by many layers of administrative structures, also by division into states, by diffusion of power to governors and to agencies and all the rest. Whereas Putin and his people are essentially, they have not, no one knows how they got their jobs, and they're not really standing on anything. And that means that if society begins to turn against them or won't do what they say, that they really have no way of coercing society. You mentioned COVID in Moscow. Well, it's a long story that of the propaganda and the attempts to make money and so forth. But try to imagine locking down Moscow. It would be impossible. Who's going to do it? I mean, the army's not going to do it. The police are not going to do it. And furthermore, there's a huge black market now in Russia for phony vaccine certificates. It simply cannot be done. So Putin, it's rather like the end of the Tsarist period when the Nicholas II seemed to have all this great power, but a few disorders in St. Petersburg and one major factory destabilized the whole empire.
The question then is, our republic not responsive because there are many layers to the president, but legitimate layers, elected layers, representative layers, representatives of the two houses of Congress, with the court system regarded as not absolute, but certainly worthwhile to listen to, given the cost that'll come to you if you ignore the courts. Now, that's all legitimate. Putin has no comparable legitimacy. He was appointed as vice president by a man who disgraced himself as too ill to be president of Russia, and he himself had inherited a tangle of different voices in the 1990s, Yeltsin, and
yes,
went to Putin only because Putin represented at some point an avenue to the security services, and Yeltsin and his family were in danger of losing everything, including their security, their personal health, if they hadn't obeyed the security services. So we went to Putin, who made inarticulate and threatening promises about the war in Chechnya and about security in Moscow, other belligerent remarks. That was his validation as vice president of Russia. Comes his presidency, which has continued now for more than two decades. He lacks legitimacy. So there's the irony, Professor. A man without legitimacy, a man who's associated with brutality, is sensitive. Isn't that odd?
Well, think of Ceausescu in Romania giving a speech, and all of a sudden there is some hissing and there's some noise in the back, and for an instant his facial expression changes, showing that he's scared, and the whole crowd just rushes him, and then he escapes in a helicopter, and then he's executed. These dictatorships are very, very fragile because they don't rest on anything. Our system or republics have an infrastructure that you might say is, say, 70% legitimate and 30% improvised. So they can make it through earthquakes better.
Make it through earthquakes better, but all right, fine. Now we come to the twist about Russia today. It's an energy superpower led by one man who has no plan of succession. And his attempt to maintain his approval rating is exhausting everyone in Russia. They're impatient with him because he's not produced what you'd have to say is equity. We call it equity, but there are lumps in the Russian economy. At the same time, Putin without a succession plan means that in order to look to the future, you have to imagine who's going to be in charge. Now, I understand that's a vulnerability, but is it also a strength? Because won't Putin be succeeded by the next strong man who grabs control of the reins of power and remains in power for several decades? Isn't that what happens next when there's no planning?
Well, either that or you get something like the Soviet Union, where Stalin was a strong man, although Stalin made an interesting remark. He said during the war, he said, never underestimate the resiliency of the democracies. When everybody thought Hitler was going to knock everybody out, the democratic or the republican structure is better buffered. But, of course, in the Soviet Union, we simply saw one sick man going to another sick man until the thing ended. So I think that not having a succession plan is a vulnerability, although it gives Putin a certain ability to seem to be in charge of everything. But your point about how the people are dissatisfied is quite right. I mean, Ukraine, which is not a vacation spot, is in fact a much better place to live now than Russia is, according to one of my colleagues who has just come back from years in both places. This is unheard of, because Russia has always considered itself to be just the Ukrainians are not even worth speaking of, or Ukraine as a country. That's because they've paid more attention to things like infrastructure, improving services, you know, that sort of thing. Whereas Russia, Putin has become distracted. And the one thing he hasn't done is create a better life for Russians. There was a time when the Russian sort of middle economy was growing. But Putin didn't like that. He wanted to be in charge of the oil flow, get his money that way. And the result is that there are a lot of people who are underemployed, don't have an enterprise. They don't have anything that they're really interested in. And Putin is incapable of conjuring up a distraction. So that is a glorious distraction in foreign policy or in space or something. And that means that when you have something like COVID or you have something like these fires in what used to be Dalstroy, I mean, this appalling labor camp all above, you know, Arctic area in Siberia, that is just it makes the floor slippery for him. And he can fall. Whereas if he had satisfied people who had their own little companies or that, you know, they devoted all their time to their restaurant and they had an income that was steadily going up, it would be different. But he's ignored that.
Final comment is that I accept the fact that Putin is vulnerable and fragile. I accept that. I mean, he's mortal, after all, and he's in his 60s and he's exhausted his benefit of a doubt, long since. The question then is, are we looking at a fragile country, or does Russia have the resources to sustain leadership absent Putin? Does that middle class, that nascent middle class, come forward with a leadership that is not state security based, or are we going to repeat this cycle again and again and again?
Well, I think that is the key question. It's very difficult because there are no pathways by which possible successors can rise close to the top. You've got a circle of plutocrats and Putin, and they're sort of manipulating everything else. That would be my first point. My second point would be if you look at Yakutia and the area out to Magadan and so forth, sort of between Norilsk and Magadan, great monuments to Stalin, there is a whole territory which is not really, it's got a lot of Russians in it, but it's basically, it's part of the Turkic world in some sense. And it's fascinating, even as fires are raging in Yakutia, that Putin is helping Turkey fight fires that are raging at Turkish resorts. And he's also, like, he's selling a very advanced missile system to Turkey and so forth. So that whole part of Russia has the capability. Remember, this area is only a little bit smaller than India, and it has been autonomous. It is autonomous now. I think that just as the Soviet Union broke up in 1991, it's quite conceivable that what Putin has managed to cobble together could begin to split too as a result of a power struggle, which is owed to the fact that Putin is always improvising to stay on his high wire rather than thinking about how to make Russia strong.
Professor H.J. Mackinder for International Relations. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.